From the Carter Subaru Studios, this is the Jack and Spike Show.
Welcome back to the Jack and Spike Show. Joe Biden tells Howard Stern that he's happy to debate Donald Trump. That is a bold-faced lie, President Biden. You're not happy.
You think so?
He doesn't like standing that much.
That's a good point.
And also the teleprompter's not there. So
that's another good point.
Strikes
he was sitting in a chair being comfortably talked to. Of course, yeah. Hey, let's bring him in.
Why not? Yeah. Karine Jean-Pierre is having a very difficult time as the White House press secretary. I can see why, because when the binder is your entire set of talking points, I can see why people want you to leave. Seattle might be becoming the next Detroit, but I think this person is totally wrong. Joining us from a bunker 30,000 feet below Henderson, Nevada, Mr. Bob Rivers, who dug that tunnel, by the way, using a team of trained geckos.
No kidding.
No kidding.
They're so hard to get to all move in one direction.
Thousands of them.
Wow.
Just digging with one little pebble at a time to get that bunker. Mr. Rivers, how are you, my friend?
Well, thank you for revealing that. And I want to say that we are not 100% sure that everyone who trained the geckos had a valid Social Security number. So please don't mention it again.
So, Bob, you're a radio legend. You're up there with many of the luminaries of the industry. Another radio legend had the opportunity to interview Joe Biden, Howard Stern. And during this interview, Biden says that he's happy to debate former President Donald Trump. This is in contrast to what both of them has said previously. If you go back about 2 years ago, they were both saying never again, would never happen. What's the point? A year ago, Trump was asked about it and he said, why? He said, I'm going to win anyway. Yes. It doesn't make any difference.
Yes, but this is politics. And a certain number of years ago, President Obama said marriage was between a man and a woman.
Yeah.
So I think there's an expiration date on it, something that any politician says. And we evolve. And I think, first off, being on Howard Stern is a major statement, not just by Joe Biden, but also by Howard Stern, because you don't get on there without showing your humanity. And so I haven't heard the interview yet. I will listen to it. So I can't draw any conclusions on whether Joe Biden came across, you know, as so many say he is sharp and fully aware of everything. And then the retort to that is, well, why didn't they video him when he was being that? You know, so you know, that struggle goes on. But I don't know if you knew this. Howard Stern really, back in 2015, wanted Hillary Clinton to come on his show. He wanted to make her more human. He was a huge Hillary endorser and couldn't talk her people. They felt it was too risky. And these days, I feel it's too risky not to be human. Let it hang out. Biden's doing some, you know, commercials about how old he is. Trump has always let it hang out. Let's say that works for him.
Hey,
right?
Bob, do you think, I think the venue matters and the parameters of a debate between Trump and Biden matters. I know Howard Trump has, Howard Stern has a long relationship with Donald Trump. I know he's a Biden supporter. As much as he was a Hillary supporter, he's not a Trump supporter. Do you think Howard Stern would be a good venue for them to debate?
Ooh, yeah.
I don't think it would be a good decision for Trump because it's not even, you know what I mean?
I think Howard could be even-handed. I think he'd also hold both of them to account on anything they say and press them on issues where they just give stock, you know, memo card answers.
Yeah, but Howard's got COVID madness. I mean, the man is neurotic beyond even my neuroses when it comes to COVID-19.
Yeah, true. Yes.
Well, the Trump campaign jumped on it. Biden said this, and the Trump campaign, his chief of whatever, says, okay, set it up. Right. And meanwhile, Trump goes, hey, come on down to the New York courthouse, Joe. I'll debate you right here, right now.
Well, but Bob brought up something that I really kind of want to key in on, because I think it's so accurate in terms of what the consumer of media wants today, which is they want authenticity. And
yes,
I think that Biden can do that in certain circumstances when his blood sugar is just right and he's had the appropriate amount of Ovaltine and ice cream.
He's not wrong.
Trump can't. And I know that people say that he's super authentic because of the way that he speaks. But does anybody actually know anything about what Trump likes? I mean, as a individual, What kind of music does he like? What kind of movies does he like? Does he have any fears about how House of Dragons on HBO is going to turn out in season two?
Second season's not going to live up to the hype.
Right, exactly. Right. If you look at Trump as an individual, he talks primarily about money, business, some things about America, but mostly about wealth. And so he lacks the ability in so many ways to be transparent in the way that other politicians. He's kind of like Hillary Clinton. She can't do it either. Bob, I'm curious about what your thoughts are.
Well, yes, I agree with all of that. Although Trump is a showman and without a doubt the greatest reality television star of all time. And the presidency itself was a reality television show. And with the most monstrous ratings in the history of broadcast anything.
Yeah, okay? he transformed it.
So if he were to go on Howard Stern, it would be entertaining. Now, you have to have a subscription to listen to that program. And I believe a lot of his supporters don't have a subscription to anything. They watch free, they watch what's on cable. So I don't know how that would work.
Howard does put his material out on YouTube on a regular basis. It's usually delayed by about 2 or 3 days, but he does put out his interviews with, for instance, Paul McCartney, guys from Green Day.
Bruce Springsteen's thing was out there for everybody.
Yeah,
I bet they put this out for free too.
Tell me what channel on my channel master this YouTube thing is on that you're telling me about.
All right, so speaking of the White House, by the way.
A lot of his fans won't know where to find. No, they will know. All right. So I think it would be great entertainment. I'm not sure it'd be the smartest move for the Trump campaign, and it would be very interesting to see what happens.
Karine Jean-Pierre is the White House press secretary, and she does not do a good job. She does a bad job at that job because she has the binder of approved talking points, and because she can't lock them into her brain, she brings them out, mm-hmm. and then when she is asked a pretty innocuous question by, let us just say, Peter Ducey from Fox News or somebody from MSNBC, mm-hmm. she has to consult the book. To the book, she says, and then she flips that
much
bad
like
boy.
The witches in Hocus Pocus.
Yes, exactly.
Book!
Right, exactly. So she flips past her Pokemon cards, and then she gets to the very back where she has her talking points. And she is awkward to watch, uncomfortable to watch. She's riddled with anxiety. She does not have any of the charisma of any other White House press secretary. She doesn't even have the kind of ferocity of, let us just say, a Jen Psaki, or the kind of standoffishness that a Jen Psaki had. She doesn't have any of those skill sets. So why is she there? I don't know. But there has been several attempts to remove her, despite the fact that is perceived to be a PR nightmare from certain members of the White House to say, well, if you fire the first openly gay black White House press secretary, that's going to be bad for, I actually looked it up, that's going to be bad for about less than a percentage of the population who might be upset about that. So I just don't know why. Bob, have you witnessed any of the montages of Karine Jean-Pierre not being able to do her job?
No. and I'm so sorry.
Yeah, it's okay.
You're missing a real show, buddy.
But I get the moral dilemma here. And as you were describing her, it's interesting to me. What is competence? Is competence how good of a show you put on, how engaging and convincing you are to other people? It depends on the job description. If the job description is that you've got, everybody's got to be warm to you when they're seeing you, then she lacks some of that. But you are getting into, of course, the issue of, do I fire someone who is I guess the word is minority, or, it could be female, it could be race, it could be gender.
Well, DEI hires, safe to say, man. Mm. I'm not saying she's not qualified, but she checks a lot of boxes.
She's not qualified.
You're saying it.
My son is a stand-up comedian, and he says, it's tough out here for a white guy. he's not that type of person at all. But he does have a point. So those are two different questions. Start with competence. What do you think, since I haven't seen her?
Well, so you can give me any topic, and I will give you 5 minutes about how I feel about that topic. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, that is
yeah.
just within
yes,
my skill set.
We all have feelings, yeah.
Nora, throw out any
There's
topic.
There's a t-shirt about that, by the way, about your feelings. I don't know if you own one of them. It should be in your closet.
Nora, give me any topic. What's a topic?
Yeah.
Unicycling?
I can think of nothing okay. that is simultaneously more efficient in terms of transportation, but also more dangerous at the same time, right?
Mm.
Because the craft of the unicycle is it's self-contained. You can do many things with it. But at the same time, it is objectively one of the most dangerous creations we've ever put on. It's almost as bad as the pogo stick in terms of causing injuries over time.
Right.
I could do that for another 10 minutes describing
and by the way, I could devil's advocate. I could counter argue you and say unicycles are good for the planet because it's only half the cycles of our regular bicycles.
That's right.
Exactly.
It cuts cycles in half.
If you ask Karine Jean-Pierre about unicycles, she's going to look at the Biden approved talking points in regards to transportation on a single wheel with two pedals. And then she'll circle back around to you as soon as we.
And the amount of money spent for infrastructure redevelopment on bicycle lanes.
Point being is that that's not necessarily competence. You know what I mean? It's she just doesn't.
Well, let me give a slight different perspective on that. It says I'm a clerk. I'm here to pass along the information that I'm told to pass along.
Mm.
And so it's limiting. It actually makes the press conference boring, which might have some strategic value in certain cases, right?
Too, yeah. Is that the byproduct of a gotcha media cycle or a gotcha media in general where everybody in the room that's on the other side of the aisle is looking to trip her up, looking to get her to say something on the record that is contrary to a policy position of the administration or law, God forbid? I mean, I think you have to go to the book nowadays because you got to be careful you're not stepping in a trap which is constantly being laid by both sides for people who speak in public.
That hasn't changed throughout my entire adult life. And prior to my adult life, I paid no attention to politics. So, I mean, that's always the case. And I don't particularly like a dull, boring person in that position. But what's the purpose of the position?
The purpose of the position is effectively to be the president's voice to the masses. Or, I mean,
exactly.
But when your voice is, let me check the binder, that does not exactly denote strength. Remember when Anthony Scaramucci had that job for about all of 3 minutes?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, he had more of an ability to do that job with his shrugging and the redoing of his collar when someone asked him a weird question than Karine Jean-Pierre does. But I don't necessarily have anything else to say about it.
Well,
Spike,
everybody's had the book, by the way. Karine Jean-Pierre doesn't do well in making these things. Like, I'm on top of this.
Mm-hmm.
She has to literally go to every topic. She's got more post-it notes than me taking a final exam with an open book test. Kayleigh McEnany had a book. Sean Spicer had a book. Sarah Huckabee Sanders had a book. C.J. Craig had a book in West Wing, and that was 30 dang years ago. They've always had a book. But you're right about Karine Jean-Pierre doesn't look like she knows about anything because she is so careful not to misstep and goes to the book for everything.
So there is a piece in the Seattle Times.
Feels like she's a short, by the way, just to put a cap on that, feels like she's a short timer. Yeah.
I agree, but she's been there for 2 years. I mean, she's been there for a very, very long time.
Since Psaki stepped away. Yeah, and it's only been two. And Trump had, I don't know how many, I'm not pointing fingers, but
18, 19.
18, 20 of them, yeah. Turnover,
baby. The Swiss Family Robinson just moving in and out of that place. Seattle is becoming the next Detroit. This is a piece that was written by John Talton, and he said, every few weeks I receive an email from a reader arguing that Seattle, quote, will be the next Detroit, end quote. They might want to reconsider that first because I laid out all the reasons why this isn't likely in a 2020 column. He goes on to say, second, because Detroit, which fell from the nation's fifth most populous city in 1980 to the 29th as of 2022, has made a significant comeback, goes on to talk about how Detroit is America's most unlikely boom town, how people are spending all kinds of money there. I just don't know why, Bob, I know you moved away from the Seattle area. I just don't know why there is so much unbelievable hate for this place where people are equating it to 1980s Detroit, because that is a level of cognitive dissonance that is insane. If you compare Seattle as it currently is today to 85 Detroit, that's pretty egregious, right?
Yeah, it seems preposterous, actually. But what it is a demonstration of angst over how difficult it has become for the average person in Seattle to live in Seattle, to afford Seattle. And when things get really tough and people feel like they're not going to make it, then Detroit, when you feel like you're not going to make it and everything's going to come crashing down, that would make you think of Detroit.
Right, and the guy sees, the article speaks to how Detroit is a boomtown. Maybe this article he's trying, maybe he's doing a poor job, but he's trying to frame it as, hey, I know downtown's suffering. Businesses are suffering. There's vacancies far more than we've ever had before. People are, there's graffiti, there's people on the streets, but we're coming back. And there's an optimism in Detroit now, in modern, in today's 2024 Detroit, that maybe we can project that onto the future of Seattle downtown with the right moves through political or business, whatever it takes.
When I look at the, I think maybe this is also a problem of worldliness, because I've been to San Francisco. I lived in San Francisco for many years. If you were to ask me which is worse, San Francisco or Seattle, I would say San Francisco. Yeah. If you were to ask me what's worse, Los Angeles or Seattle, I would say Los Angeles, yeah, hands down. Yeah. We have a very small issue comparatively to other major metropolitan areas in Seattle. But I think because of the disproportionate media attention that's given to it,
yes,
it seems as if it's almost like those cartoons, like those Looney Tunes cartoons, when the little mouse would start walking in and the shadow against the wall made it look like it was
30 feet tall.
Yeah. That's basically what the media has done to crime in Seattle. And they try to make it seem as if it's apocalyptic, where in actuality, it's comparatively, it is actually very good. And so I don't really buy all this kind of this negativity, other than people are enjoying living in that amount of disdain for the place that they live.
Yeah. Bob, you've been, 10 years removed from Seattle now, just about?
Yes, about 2015 is when we went to Vermont to make maple syrup.
But you visited very recently, right? So sometimes when a city decays from underneath your feet, you don't notice it because it's so incremental.
Okay.
When you came back to Seattle after years away, did you notice diminished city?
And I still have a lot of friends in Seattle, and even people who annoy me, like you.
Thank you. I noticed you didn't stay at my house, but that's another issue.
But Seattle will always be home. And, you know, when a retired person goes to the desert and sits under a palm tree, that's when I come up from my bunker. I always think fondly about the city and the history of the city and the sheer brilliance of thinking and intellectual property and invention that has come out of Seattle, starting, you know, with software, aircraft. Seattle figured out how to charge $50 for a cup of coffee. Seattle is great.
Genius.
But most people I talk to now feel it has gone, not downhill, but it is just less fun and less easy to move around and more difficult to make ends meet. And I think if you want to blame crime and homelessness, they're easy targets. Because by targeting them, you're not actually offering a fix, and you're expressing your frustration. So on a human nature level, that's how that feels to me.
Mr. Rivers, thank you so much for your time, my friend. You got anything you want to cross-promote while you're on the airwaves?
What's a good show on these days? Dynasty, the story of the New England Patriots. You got to check that out. And there's a little Seattle in there, too.
BobRivers.com is the place where you can find everything Bob Rivers. We'll take a really quick break when we get back. Cringer Bay, cicadas are so noisy in one town that the residents are calling the police. We need to talk about education in the United States.
Thank you.
We need to talk about our education system when we get back right after this.
If you take a hose outside somebody's window and they believe it's raining, I don't blame them.
Or based.
I was thinking about investing in llamas.
Smart.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Massive return on investment. Cringer Base, a fun game we like to play here at 1:34. Cicadas. Cicadias? I don't know how to speak anymore. It's Friday.
Or cicadias.
Either one. We could say anything. We could call them, I don't know.
Bugs.
Bugs are so noisy in South Carolina County that residents are calling the police. Now, we've talked about a story similar to this a couple of different times, in which there are broods of cicadas that are emerge either every 13 or every 17 years.
Correct.
And because we live in a universe that experiences time in a linear fashion, math is a thing.
It is.
We're not subjected to random chaotic events like Puff the Magic Dragon and then RuPaul all emerging in space-time and then doing battle with lasers. So because of math, these two broods are now emerging at the same time.
Right.
The last time that happened was when Thomas Jefferson was alive, again, because of math. And it's pretty amazing. So the problem is it's county where this is happening. These two broods, it's like a Venn diagram.
Okay, and they're both coming
coming up.
And they're subterranean, right, when they're dormant for, like I said, 13 or 17 years.
Right. We have a little bit of a biologist or a bug person. Who is this? Biophysicist is talking about what they do when they come out of the ground. Here's what that sounded like.
We're going to get trillions of these amazing living organisms come out of the earth. It's like an entire alien species living underneath our feet. And then some prime number of years, they come out to say hello. And all they do is just climb up on trees and pee.
I'm sorry, what?
Because they pee.
But while you've been sleeping for 13 years, you'd go to the bathroom.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I slept in a little bit this morning. I'll tell you, I was at the bathroom for half an hour. You know,
anybody call the police because it was so loud?
Yeah, my neighbors were like, who's got a fire hose in there? So this is what they sound like. This is the cicadas screaming. This is their mating call.
Yeah,
you feeling it?
No, I'm not.
You feeling that, you guys? I'm feeling it, man. I'm feeling steamy in here. Listening to them cicadas sing their love song.
Rubbing them wings together.
Jeez, you guys. Yeah. Cool it down about 1,000 notches. Now, I've never looked at a cicada a certain way, but after hearing that song,
those
I'm
big
just saying,
red eyes looking at you.
Big old goofy red eyes and those six legs look like it could just tear my head right off. I mean, why not?
That's only after mating.
Listen, man, I don't have a biased bone in my body when it comes to love. All right, so if you're in this county in South Carolina, I'm just going to go out on a limb here and say that the police, short of, I don't know, having a squad of a million John Goodmans from Arachnophobia, aren't really going to be able to do that much, right?
Sure. No, the guy said trillions.
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 So are you expecting the police to come out with, like, flamethrowers? Like it's, you know, like Starship Troopers? They're just going to start running around with automatic weapons, just shooting the cicadas? Like, what do these people want?
Well, it's a temporary thing.
Right.
There's a cycle in a season. It's probably last less than 3 weeks, if I'm not mistaken.
You know, these people probably didn't even pay attention to the news. And so they started hearing the noise and they were like, Ma,
is that a siren? It's revenuers. Have the steel.
Mom, I think the birds have been singing at night again, Ma. Sounds like Uncle Chuck's Chevy's backing up again, ran over one of them cats outside, Ma.
What they have to do, remember the Blues Brothers technology?
Ma!
Ma!
Ma, what's all that noise outside, Ma?
I'm scared!
I was just in here watching reruns of the NASCAR from 9 to 5, and I can't hear nothing over that whistling noise I keep hearing, Ma. It sounds like the electricity.
They don't make them like they used to. They sure don't.
What are these people so insane about? That's the thing I don't understand.
Well,
why are you calling the police? The police can't do everything,
well,
right?
They don't know if it's a siren, if it's an air raid siren, if it's a public warning of a flood or tornado siren.
Oh, please.
But I'm just telling you, called it, though. We need to educate people. That's what we need to do.
They're bugs. Well, how much educating do you step out your front door and you go, hey, Ma, I think there's a bunch of bugs outside right now.
Have you ever seen a cicada
It's a lot
bloom?
More than the mosquito.
It's skater season. It's like, it's biblical. It's a plague.
I've told you that a couple summers ago, I was back in Maryland seeing friends and family, and they had a cicada bloom in Maryland. And they literally were, I mean, you could drive down the road in the middle of the day and your car would be pelted with cicadas that were just airborne to the point where you couldn't see through the windshield and your wipers are pushing this green slime back. They're unbelievable numbers. So if you do what the Blues Brothers did, get an old cop car, tie a huge horn to the top of it, and
attention citizens of South Carolina,
you know, let people know that it's nothing to fear. They're just bugs. You can eat them if you want to.
I have a better idea.
What do you got?
I have a better idea. We do the Blues Brothers idea, but then what we do is we take the sound of them screaming and we play it. We're going to be the Pied Piper of cicadas, right?
Oh.
And so we lead them away from the township by playing that sound. So just imagine it's on top of an old Chevy. Nora, can you hit that sound for us again? Right? The sound of the cicadas. And you just blast that, right? And then
you draw them away.
Slowly draw them away.
Genius.
Right? We call that hillbilly technology.
Genius.
Where I come, I'm gonna get me some of them speakers. We'll give them the PV speakers. We call them Mississippi Marshals. Strap them to the top of this Chevy. I'm gonna be blasting that thing through my 8-track. And I'm going to lead them all the way down to Enoch County.
where they can just have sex and pee and have all the fun they want.
Have all the fun they
want. Bug nobody.
Over in Uncle Chuck's backyard. No one likes him since the family reunion when he came around too drunk that one time. Started making all that jokes about everybody else's weight. He's the fattest man in the family, man. Weighs 600 pounds. Take all them cicadas down there. He can deal with it. That's what I'm saying.
Should have had his own TV show. That guy was a natural.
Okay, but you're calling the police because you hear bugs. Like this,
well, you're scared. You don't know what it is.
The last time I called the police in fear was when, meaning like I was legitimately afraid for my life and other people's life.
Yeah, and that's why these people are calling the cops. They have genuine concern about what this noise is.
I was driving onto a freeway, and I was going onto the ramp that you get up to speed to get onto the freeway.
The on-ramp.
And there was a Hispanic gentleman on the freeway who, this is going to sound like a joke, it's not. He was wearing a Chevy's sombrero, no pants, and a Tommy Bahama like style Hawaiian shirt.
Uh-huh.
So in front of God and all creation, I could see everything that that man had to offer.
Sure.
And he had two water jugs, which I will tell you right now were not filled with water. I have no idea to this day. It was either lemonade or something else. And he was swinging around like he was a helicopter about to take off, if you can envision that in your mind. So he's kind of doing pirouettes.
Yeah, you're painting a picture for me.
Right.
Yeah.
And so as he was doing this, he hit my car with one of his jugs.
Jugs?
And it exploded and because it just erupted all over the place.
Right.
So then I stopped my car because clearly I needed to see if this gentleman was in trouble in any way, shape, or form. And when I turned around, he was taken off down
the
on-ramp, fleeing from the scene of the crime. And so I called the police.
That's when you call the cops.
Just shaking with fear out of what I just saw, because I thought to myself, there's a sequence of events that led up to that circumstance happening in this universe. And I need to know what it is.
Yeah.
I need to know what caused that man to think that he was a helicopter and that he could fly off of the freeway.
In a chili sombrero and no pants.
In a Chevy sombrero.
On a Chevy sombrero.
Oh, No Stupid Questions, a fun segment we like to do every single day. 888-973-5476 is the Muckleshoot Casino Resort text line. You can ask us any question your heart desires. For instance, what's going on with the Trump case? Nothing new. It's very boring. Why do SNL former cast members keep getting jobs in advertising? I don't know. It's really weird. Amy Poehler, I have no idea why they keep doing these things for American Home Shield, but we can talk about it when we get back right after this.
There are no stupid questions.
There are only stupid answers.
Ah, yes. Not a single stupid question to be had. Steve wants to know, hey, Jackson, which social media platform would you choose, X or Threads? Neither. I think people need to chisel away the social media that they use empirically.
Okay.
I just think that people need to get away from it more. I mean, you go to a place like YouTube, at least people create stuff.
Okay.
At least people are making something.
Not just opinioning, opining.
Well, I mean, there's effort there, and you can find nice, pleasant things, and you can learn about all kinds of stuff. But as far as Twitter goes, there's some insane person out there. I'm trying to be nicer. Sorry, I'll try to be nice. There's a guy out there who hate listens to the show.
Okay.
He's an anti-fan, and he has followed us onto YouTube.
Okay.
And he wrote us a very mean comment on one of our videos, and I responded to him in the kindest way I possibly could.
Good for you.
And I realized in his response that he wrote back to us that he was the same anti-fan who had engaged with us previously, because he was talking about my opinions on Twitter. The video wasn't about Twitter. The comment wasn't about Twitter. He just said something to the effect of, keep disparaging people, slandering people who use Twitter or whatever it is. And then I realized in reading that how sad that is, that this guy has such a social media sickness that on a video that has nothing to do with Twitter, in a comment thread that has nothing to do with our radio show, he brings up a take that I had maybe 6 weeks ago because it bugs him so much.
Yeah.
He does not like me, and yet he listens to all 3 hours of the show. This is mental illness. This is what social media does to people.
I'm with you there, man.
Why people have to get away from it. I'm not a big fan of certain commentators out there.
Mm-hmm.
If I met them in person, I would want to talk about anything but politics because I would just want to know who they are as a person. So get rid of social media. Jack, you're missing the fact about Donald Trump that he is authentic. Earlier, I said that Donald Trump could not appear on Howard Stern because he's not an authentic individual. He can't be. That's why he's all about business, wealth, flamboyancy. That is Donald Trump. That is authenticity. It's not, though. So when you are mired in a consumerist mindset and the things that you acquire are equated to your personality, that's not authenticity. That is being conceited, right? That's being, I am not the things that I own. I am not the things that I possess. And I am not my successes, right? I am literally moment to moment who I am as a human being. So when you try to equate authenticity to business, wealth, and flamboyancy, those are protection mechanisms against authenticity. Does that make sense? It
makes perfect sense. I mean, what are you worth, right? It's not about what you're worth in the way of your monetary possessions or your property possessions. You know, what makes you valuable, Jack Stein, right?
Well, not even that,
dude. Your experiences, your empathy, your heart, your passion, those make you valuable, not what size guitar collection you have or how much you have in the bank.
Or how flexible I am. Or how good-looking I am.
But no, those are all values.
Or my perfect genetics.
I wish I knew more about Donald Trump. I really do. I wish I knew where does he like to take his grandkids? What's the best Christmas memory he ever had?
What song brings him to tears every time he hears it?
Right, it's money, 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 money.
Right, so there are things, when we talk about authenticity, Americans have been sold a bill of goods about authenticity, which is it's what clothes I wear, it's what cups I own, it's what car I have in the driveway, and that is consumerist garbage. And unfortunately, Donald Trump is the hallmark of consumerist garbage. The man, I doubt, could tell you how he really feels about anything about himself personally, in the sense that if you were to ask me to reflect on my own behavior, I would say, oh, there's a lot of things that I could work on. It's a lot of things that I could, my neuroses or my whatever it is, right? Okay. There's lots of the laundry list of things that Donald Trump can't do that. And so that is authenticity. Vulnerability is authenticity. What Donald Trump gives people is just complete and total trash. You are the president of a university. What would you say to the students who are protesting on your campus? You're fired. That's what I would say.
That's what Trump would say.
What would you say, Spike?
To the students on my university, I said, you know what? We hear what you're saying. We appreciate and understand your concerns, right? But get the hell off the quad. No.
You're fired.
I would say what you're asking is a difficult process to unwind the university's endowments into various things that don't please you. We understand you have a voice and it's valuable. Let's take this off the quad. Let's address the concerns you want to talk about. Let's talk privately.
And you're fired.
And you're fired.
Criticism and praise of the Texas governor after a dramatic use of troopers on protesters. We're watching it right now on the big screens in the Cairo Radio studios because the fascist police are currently beating up adolescents based on their presuppositions around
Israel,
Palestine.
Yeah, we saw it yesterday in Austin and at University of Texas. Today it's at Emory in Atlanta.
Yeah, it's really bad. Supreme Court seems poised to allow Trump January 6th trial, but not immediately because the name of the game is to stall. And Southwest Airlines is closing its operations at 4 U.S. airports, including Bellingham. Why?
Can't get the planes.
Can't get the planes.
Can't meet the schedule. They're losing money.
We'll talk about it when we get back right after this.